Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we've got the scintillating Sarah Meadows.
What word is that?
I don't know. I had to look it up.
Okay.
He cheated. Skip ahead.
Today we've got the... No idea. I was put on the spot for this. Sorry, Kevin. I don't know.
The mischievous Melissa.
Ooh, the rowdy Ryan.
The jammin' Jonah Do.
Yes, that's good.
Jammin'.
Finally. And we have the wily Will Meadows.
That's right. Welcome to the show, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Today we're going to be talking about some of our favorite games for couples, our top 10. We're going to be putting out a video on that as well. We'll be talking about it in this episode. We're also going to be covering some Kickstarter games. We've got two interviews in this episode, and we're going to recap, even though it hasn't happened yet in real time, Tantrum Con Digital.
What? How can we recap something that didn't happen?
I don't know. It will have happened. A precap. I like it. Is that a thing?
I just made it up.
Oh, I like it. That's
great. I like it. Precap that already happened.
Mm-hmm. So in real time, we haven't experienced the awesomeness that is Tantrum Con Digital yet. Only have we experienced really rough dress rehearsals.
But in podcast time, it's all done with... It's all over.
And it was amazing. You loved it. And thank you for coming to it. So some of the things that I'll be looking forward to that I'll hopefully in post be able to say I experienced was we're going to be playing trivia games. And it's really cool. The op sponsored us. So we're able to actually use Trivial Pursuit questions, like the legit real deal. So we're going to be having a Harry Potter Trivial Pursuit. Kevin and Melissa will have already hosted that. Hopefully it'll be fun. Hopefully some serious Harry Potter fans got on there and won big prizes. I'm going to be doing one for SpongeBob and Bob's Burgers comboed. And hopefully that'll just be a blast. Hopefully it goes really smooth and works well. And hopefully everyone loves it. What are some of the things that you guys in precap look forward to having experienced by the time people listen to this?
I mean, that limbo line. That's pretty excellent.
Good spoiler. I like that. History spoiler. Good. That was fun. Nobody broke their legs or anything.
That's good. I will say I'm glad we have rehearsed a few times. So hopefully the real thing is amazing.
I hope so. I think it has all the potential because sponsors have been incredibly generous. We have tons of amazing giveaways that we're going to be handing out to people. The videos for the table flipping, I have had the privilege of seeing them. You guys haven't yet, so you'll be surprised when it happens and have already been surprised. They turned out great. We got several people who just, went real low key. Several people who went over the top.
I'm going to pump you up.
It's so good. That's my favorite one, actually. I hope she won. We'll find out. Yeah, some really cool submissions.
I watched most of that one.
You did get, a couple of people sent them to you. So that one was funny. It was cracking me up. None of the jokes are in, the recap video because that's just, the full-on action flipping.
Okay.
So I'm hoping everybody went back, actually voted on them, and gets to see the full-on submissions because some of them are hilarious.
Cool. Yes, we should talk about games we've been playing, though.
That sounds like a fine idea. What's some of the stuff besides Tantrum Con games that we've gotten to the table? Or have we gotten any others?
Well, we actually just played Overboss tonight.
Yeah, we'll be playing that at Tantrum Con. We've talked about it in previous podcasts, I believe. But yeah, it's a good one. It's tile laying. Oh, last time I hadn't actually played it. That's what it was.
Yeah, it's like I don't have to actually played it.
If you listened to our show previously, I hadn't played it. Now I have. It is a lot of fun. It's kind of a Castles-like light tile laying game. Every tile has its own scoring method. And you are both trying to strategize what tiles you put down because they score different ways. And you're also trying to strategize what tokens you are getting to put down because you get points if the token matches the tile and if the tokens are in a line of like tokens. So you can really rack up the points, But if you just go straight tiles, you can also win easily that way, as Kevin showed us tonight.
I did show you how that happened tonight.
I've never seen someone actually get that many points with the cloud tiles, because you are trying not to diversify at all. Just get straight clouds as much as possible. And Kevin did it.
Yep. Don't diversify, just get straight clouds. Yeah. It was, I got 5 points per cloud because I didn't diversify.
Yeah. It was pretty high score, but it was only 2 more than the next person. So
right, which was Ryan.
It was.
Ryan's
and
played this
next
played
it
person
3 times before. So
you sort of knew some of the strategies going in.
So
I didn't.
It was a good strategy.
Like, I think I could have gotten even more points if I had thought about the secondary tiles, the little tiles, because I could have switched some things around, I think. I don't know. I might not have been able to.
Yeah. So we are going to play that again. During the Tantrum Con Digital, so check it out. We are going to play with a new formation of the tiles. We swapped some of them out, so it'll be all new for us. Hopefully, well, not all new, but
with the overbosses,
it'll be at least
too.
A little bit new for us. Yeah, and we'll be playing with the boss cards, which give you a special ability that you get to use one time and some special bonus points that you try to achieve. So watch us suffer analysis paralysis. It's actually a really quick game. So check it out. It's pretty fun.
Melissa and I were able to actually play another tile laying game that you'll see at TantrumCon, which is Umbra Via from Pandasaurus Games. It has got a really, really cool aesthetic to it, and it's very abstract strategy type game where it is not really just tile laying, is it, Melissa?
No, it has some hidden bidding going on where you're placing your energy tokens mm-hmm. and soul tokens on spaces behind a screen, so you don't know which tiles people are bidding on. And then there's also an area control mechanic mm-hmm. as well, trying to have the most tokens on the paths that you're making on the board with the tiles.
Yep. Something outside of Tantrum Con, though, we started playing Cantaloupe from Asmodee. And this is a
cantaloupe.
No, cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe.
Yes, CANTALOOP. Cantaloupe.
I think that's how I spell cantaloupe.
That's well, we know how you spell WandaVision too. Well, Wanda with an O is not correct. Cantaloupe is actually the name of the detective, correct, Melissa?
It's the town.
Oh, the town is Cantaloupe. Anyway, it is a mystery themed game, sort of think in the realm of the Unlocks and other Sherlock Holmes consulting detectives and things like that, where you have this mystery you're trying to figure out. It is very similar to those video games that point and click, like Curse of Monkey Island. Anybody play the Monkey Island games?
Monkey Island, yeah.
Yeah, so we started playing this, and it has that really Monkey Island feel to it, because there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek going on, but it has the red decoder.
You can see stuff when you wave it over it.
Yeah, I mean, most of the book is that, except for pictures.
Right, so you'll open the book and one page is the picture, and it has numbers and things like that. And then the other half is a bunch of codes with text, but it's all scrambled
them.
Until you put the decoder on it. So you may have to add this item like, oh, I'm going to use my magnifying glass to look at this little stain. You find the number, put the decoder over it, and then it tells you whether you found something awesome or not.
You were wrong.
Right. And you're traveling through the town of Cantaloupe trying to figure out the mystery. We're only like a couple hours in. I think it says it's 5 to 8 hour long. So it's a pretty long adventure.
Is it going to loop? Is there time travel?
No,
is
there's
a
no looping. I mean, that I know of.
Can't loop.
Yes, yeah,
oh,
Cantaloupe.
Can't loop.
Oh, maybe it's part of the thing. Anyway, it is 16 plus for age. Which I wasn't sure, like, what does that mean? It's mainly language so far.
Okay.
And I would say on the language scale, if you want to say there's a language scale, it's definitely on the more 16-year-old language scale. There's some four-letter words, but not, like, the bad, bad four-letter words.
The medium bad letter.
Right.
Ones that my kids still aren't allowed to say.
Still not allowed to say it.
But if you hit your hammer with the fist,
right.
With your finger with a hammer.
Right.
Pop a tissue.
In four, that's how I spell that too. Four letters.
Yeah, and then the whole theme is kind of you're trying to get a crew together to perform a heist. So you're trying to break into prison to break someone out of prison. So even the theme's a little
darker.
A little more mature.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, just to be aware of the whole game mechanic. So far, I've enjoyed it. I would say the closest game that's already out there would be the newest Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which has this, have you already experienced before this scene? It'll ask you those things, and then you'll be able to continue on in the story based on what you've already accomplished. And the game sort of knows that as you are sort of crossing things off on this little card.
Yeah, and that's the Baker Street Irregulars, Sherlock Holmes.
Thank you, Melissa. Baker Street
Irregulars. Cool. If you're looking for a game that fits great for kids under 16, I talked about this a little bit previously, but we just finished Zombie Teens.
Oh, you finished it?
And we did. Good stuff. We made it all the way through. Now, granted, we cheated a little, as usual.
That's every game with Will.
Right. There were some missions where you were supposed to, like, accomplish these three things before you go on. I'm pretty sure they meant you have to play the game three times to accomplish it, but we're just really good. We just accomplished all three of them at the same time. So we made it through the game a little faster, but we wanted to get to those final envelopes and find out what we were opening. And not disappointing. It was a cool little thing at the very end. I'm spoiling it a little bit. Here we go, plug your ears. It introduces a whole new game mode, which is cool.
What?
So not only have you like introduced new characters down and rules going throughout the game, but then it just like flips it on its head at the end, and it's fun stuff.
Like Stranger Things upside down?
Just like that, actually.
Nice.
No, not just like that, but it gives you some great replayability, additional replayability at the end of the game, which is cool. So the boys enjoyed it. We're begging to play it. We finished it off. Zombie Teens gets the thumbs up.
Not this week, but next podcast, we will all be able to talk about Red Rising, which is...
Dun, dun, dun. We're allowed to talk about that. I need the pew-pew-pew sound effect. Where's it at?
So, Red Rising is the new game from Stonemaier Games with the codename Gold. That's all we're allowed to say in this podcast episode. Next podcast episode, we can dive in deep and tell you a little bit more about it.
Or you can email Will at... Just kidding. Awesome. Good stuff. Can't wait to talk about it. Why don't we take a break now and jump into our first interview, and then we'll come back.
Hey!
And we have Laura, who is the COO of Game On Tabletop. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Laura, you're all the way from France. So we're glad that you are able to jump on here and share with us a little bit about Game On Tabletop. How's France doing right now? Is it warm and sunny?
So where I live, it's rainy right now, but it's getting warmer. But then again, I mean, we're in lockdown nearly most of the time, so nobody gets to really enjoy all of the sun anyway. So,
yeah, it's still cold here. We're in the, you probably do Celsius. I don't even know what it would be in Celsius. In Fahrenheit, it's 40 degrees, which is pretty cold. So,
oh, yeah. That's still very, it's warmer over here.
Okay, good. Well, tell me a little bit about what is Game On Tabletop?
Absolutely. So Game On Tabletop is a crowdfunding platform for gamers by gamers, which means that we're dedicated just to tabletop games. That's our main focus throughout all of the projects. So it might be board games, miniature games, RPGs. It could be an accessory or anything around that. And so what we try to provide is we try to provide as much services that are targeted to that audience and that industry, and also a solution that includes all of the features that you need to run a successful long-term project in crowdfunding.
Wow, that's very interesting. So you're sort of competing with Kickstarter and other crowdfunding platforms. That's great. So tell me how this got started.
So we started out back in 2013. We've actually been funded by a French RPG publisher who wanted to get into crowdfunding, and there was no Kickstarter available in France, and so they built their own tool. And so it was always thought out for this industry, because obviously as a publisher, we kind of know what a platform would need to make most sense. And okay. So over the years, we just saw, hey, we built this tool, which seems really different than what's out there, because it includes the whole pledge management process. It includes auto unlocking stretch goals and stuff like that. And so we opened it up internationally and to all types of games as an invitation for creators who want to use a feature more targeted to them, and also work with other people from this industry, making the whole crowdfunding process less overwhelming and being mm-hmm. less alone out there when you launch.
I was just going to ask if this was opened internationally. So I'm assuming you started in France back in like 2014, 2015?
Yeah, so when we started out back in France in 2013, quickly other French publishers started using it, and then also German publishers started using it, but it was more like in the role-playing sphere. And then in 2017, we opened it up to all types of games, and then into English and more German and Italian, and yeah, I had projects a bit from all over Australia, the UK, Spain, and elsewhere.
Wow, that's amazing. So an international crowdfunding platform. Tell me, so I'm assuming there's still a lot of projects with France, but you said what are some of the big ones that are coming from Germany and the US, or just all over the place?
It's all over the place. And then obviously you have to take into account that a big project in the US, which would be a huge project in some of the other countries, just because we have fewer people in one country, obviously. Mm-hmm. So some of the big projects in Germany would be projects from Ulysses Spieler, who use the platform a ton for their RPG creations. We worked with Paizo on some of their Kingmaker stuff, which is also an RPG. We've done some very big pledge management systems as well. So projects.
So it's all involved with the pledge managers, all part of the system?
Yeah, the pledge manager is included in the system. So if you run your campaign right from the start on Game On, you don't need an external pledge manager because you have access to your data instantly. And you can basically start shipping whenever your campaign finishes or your products are ready. But you can also use Game On as a late pledge and pledge management campaign, meaning that if you have funded on another platform, you can still come to us and then use us as a pledge manager and also gather more late pledges. And so, yeah, recently we've done the late pledge for Conan from Monolith last year. And so, yeah, we've had projects all over, different sizes. We have tiny projects and then we have bigger ones and a very different types of creators that come to us.
All right. So I'm actually on the website right now. Let's pretend I'm a person that's looking to back a crowdfunding game. What's the process? So I go on your website, gameontabletop.com, and how do I search for things that I might enjoy? Is there a certain process?
So obviously you have the projects that are featured on our homepage, which are the projects that are live and which are freshest. And then you can also go on the top right, you can go into the explore section and see all of the projects that are currently live, where you can filter through a couple of elements in there. And then obviously use the search as well. And once you're on a campaign page, you can find all the information. You will find a grid, which will be quite similar to what people know from other crowdfunding platforms. So it should be easy to navigate, to find what you can back. We try to implement stuff like thumbnails in the pledges to make them stand out more, have people better understand what they're actually purchasing, and also being able to purchase add-ons right when you're completing your pledge and not having to come back necessarily to add everything else. I mean, you can, but you can also make your selection right from the start.
How do I know if the game supports the English language and things like that?
Generally, it's stated on the project itself. Like if a campaign page will be only in French or German, then generally that means that there is no English support. And campaigns that do English support generally are mainly in English or will include a header, which will indicate that right away. But
I noticed that. Okay.
Yeah. We totally embrace the fact that there are great creations. Also, they're just localized. And so, yeah, we leave it up to the project creator whether or not they want to offer different languages on their project.
Is there a way to sort between board games and RPGs?
Not yet. That's okay. Actually, so we are kind of listing that feature right now on the backend side of things, and it's something that should be coming up quite soon.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No, don't worry. But the thing is obviously as well that we don't have that many projects that are live at any given time, and so we encourage people browsing through the different elements.
Sure.
What we can see is that a lot of our people, even the ones that have been there initially from our role-playing game audience, then migrate over to some board games if they think it looks fun. And so it's actually quite interesting to see as well how communities kind of overlap.
So tell me why, as a creator, if someone's coming to your platform, why they should choose Game On Tabletop instead of another crowdfunding platform to create their game?
So the first part would be, I think for us, is our proximity with the tabletop industry. That's where we come from. That's what we love. That's where our passion is. And it's also the spot where we reinvest into. So kind of investing into GameOn is investing in the industry as a whole. And mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's also that what will help us to provide more in-depth recommendations, because it's not just, okay, a general project and a general platform, right? We can connect people with people from that industry if needed. And then obviously as well, the fact that we built the tools for tabletop games in mind. Obviously, we don't have every tool yet. Obviously, we have tons and tons of people asking us, could you implement this or that? I mean, I think the ideas are limitless in there, and we're working hard to always push out new elements. But yeah, like we've seen that in tabletop games, there's a lot of need for digital file fulfillment, because RPGs are books and they need PDFs, and then yep. Board games need rules and STL files for miniatures and stuff like that. So we implemented a PDF library, digital loot, right, into the game on system right away, because it makes sense for a ton of our creators.
Great. Well, I have, this is very interesting. I'm interested in what will be on GameOn tabletop in the future. So that's great. It's great having you on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our fans and audience about GameOn tabletop before we say goodbye?
So yeah, well, feel free to check us out at GameOnTabletop.com. We are also having now a YouTube channel where we are providing more insights about us as a platform, but also providing content about our creators, interviewing them, helping people with their campaigns. So check that out as well. It's GameOnTabletop on YouTube. And feel free to reach out to any one of us if you want to learn more.
Great. Well, thank you, Laura, for being on the show, and all the best with GameOnTabletop.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kevin, for having me.
Bye. Well, it was great talking to Laura from GameOnTabletop, another way for content or creators, publishers to crowdfund their games. It's another crowdfunding platform. So, yeah.
They're coming from everywhere.
They are. There's a lot of options that are sort of coming that will be available to people, not only creators, but also customers and backers as they look to see, you know, what games are available, not only on Kickstarter now. So you have Game on Tabletop and Game Found and Crowdox. And we'll talk about all those now as we do a shout out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Renegade Game Studios. Their game Snallygaster Situation, Kids on Bikes board game, is coming to CrowdOx on February 10th. And you'll hear more about this in our Kickstarter conniption.
But I'm going to ask you a question first. Do you know who does the art on those? I'm putting you on the spot. The Kids on Bikes art is fun. Like, it's very cool looking. And I don't know who that is, but...
Well, this one for the board game, which I'm not sure...
Is it not the same as the books?
I don't know. But Scott O'Gara and Heather Vaughn are the ones listed for this one.
Keep an eye out for those.
Let's jump into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about six games coming to Kickstarter the second and third weeks of February 2021. Start us off, Kevin.
And not only Kickstarter, but many other crowdfunding campaigns.
That is true. We got several this time.
Because the first one we're talking about from Lucky Duck Games, they are now going to GameFound.com.
They're doing it.
One of the probably bigger
regular Kickstarter creators.
Yeah. Lucky Duck is a huge Kickstarter creator that they're moving to GameFound, but GameFound is definitely giving Kickstarter a run for its money. So anyway.
Or is Kickstarter giving... Wait, sorry.
We can talk about that in another episode.
We got to find out the news.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Okay. Lucky Duck Games is bringing on February 9th the next sort of addition to Kingdom Rush series, which is a new standalone game called Kingdom Rush Elemental Uprising. This is for 1 to 4 players, and the game takes about 45 to 90 minutes to play. The game is fully co-op, just like the other Kingdom Rush game, if you're familiar with that. And this is sort of like a very tower defense type game. If you're familiar with the app the Kingdom Rush app. It's very similar to that, as you are, there's these hordes of enemies coming and you are cooperatively working together to put up defenses and archers and soldiers and basically attacking them as they come in, and you're trying to just defeat all these monsters that are coming in. There is, yes.
Oh, I was just going to say, Apprentice Dan and I actually played it.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. As the cards with the monsters come in, you're trying to cover up different symbols.
Right.
And you have tiles that are shaped that...
Like Tetris-like tiles.
Yeah, Tetris-like mm-hmm. tiles to cover those up. And once you eliminate an entire card, you flip it over and it gives you a reward, either coins or gems, that you can then use the gems to upgrade your towers and the coins to give little bonus things on your tower. So I had one that was just a level 2 tower, but one of the bonuses let me fire anywhere on the map instead of adjacent. So it was super useful.
Cool.
So
I think that's new to this new standalone game.
I don't think it was in the original game.
The other one was just, I think, points or something like that. You were gems or something, so you were collecting.
It was a lot of fun. We had a good time.
This new one also has a sort of campaign, a scenario-based. So if you like campaign-type games, definitely check out this new game from Lucky Duck called Kingdom Rush Elemental Uprising. Melissa.
On February 16th, we have from Stronghold Games, Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition. This is a standalone game. This is not an expansion to Terraforming Mars. And it is for 1 to 4 players, plays in about 45 minutes to 60 minutes. And there's not a lot of information available yet, but some of the mechanics listed are a follow mechanism, hand management, income, simultaneous action, and variable player powers. They say it's an engine building game where players control interplanetary corporations with the goal of making Mars habitable and profitable. So in theme, it sounds very similar to Terraforming Mars, but maybe a bit quicker and maybe not as complex with the card play, but still has an engine building element to it. So if you're a fan of Terraforming Mars, take a look at Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition and see what this new standalone game offers. Ryan?
Coming February 10th, as we said in our sponsor spot, is the Snallygaster Situation from Renegade Games. Katie and I have had a chance to play this, and it was a lot of fun. One player takes on the role of the lost kid, and they are trying to be found by the other players. And the other players take on the role of 2 to 4 kids on bikes that are going around the town of Lakeview and trying to accomplish goals. And every time the lost kid takes a turn, they will play a card that gives a clue, possibly, as to where they are located. But it also influences how the monster moves and where search tokens go out for the other kids to try to get quests and items and stuff. So the lost kid really has to weigh his choices, like, do I cause the monster to get closer to these kids, putting them in danger, but also give a really good clue, or do I give a worthless clue that's going to throw them off the scent, but keep them safe? So there's a lot of balance there.
Interesting.
I found it was really difficult to find the lost kid. It was just not something that came naturally to me. I kept thinking Katie was hinting at, like, very specific things, but she wasn't at all. She's just trying to save me by keeping the monster away from me. There are 4 monsters to play as, and we specifically played with the Bloody Mary and the Jersey Devil, which are 2 different difficulties. The Jersey Devil, almost every turn, is advancing the doom track towards game failure. And so it just feels like a race against time. And the Bloody Mary, you don't even get to see where she is out on the board. Just things happen. You're like, oh, she must have been in that territory, but I didn't know she could even move into that territory. And you have to kind of lay a trap for Bloody Mary that she ends up in the same space as you with a certain card. And it was very tense.
It sounds interesting.
So it was fly by the seat of our pants sort of thing. Lots of fun. Definitely check it out on GameFound, right?
Crowdox.
Crowdox. Yes. Sorry. So many.
There's no right answers right anymore.
Avenues, yeah.
We should probably say every time if it's coming to Kickstarter, CrowdOx, GameFound, or the new game on tabletop.
Yeah. So check it out. From Renegade Games, the Snallygaster situation on CrowdOx. Jonah, what you got?
So head into Kickstarter. Kickstarter?
Right, maybe.
Kickstarter.
Yeah, probably.
On February 17th is Block and Key from Inside Up Games. So this game is actually pretty unique. I really enjoyed it. I had a chance to play. So in this game, first off, first thing that made it unique is that you're playing on the game box. So I like that aspect. Like you flip the top over and you flip the bottom over, and then they come with like these little stands where you put the top and the bottom on the stands. So it's almost like a, it's like a 3D tower that built out of the game box. So I was already like, okay, I'm liking it, right? Then you're actually playing with these 3D blocks. So think of Tetris blocks in 3D that are made out of like this
clay.
Softish, hardest clay.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, I asked
which,
them.
Which clay. Already is fun. Yeah. So right. They're like
you're
two for two,
in.
Right? Okay, then it's all about your, even though it's 3D, 3D blocks, 3D blocks, it's all about your 2D perspective. So they have you sit on certain sides of the game box. Depending on your player count, they'll tell you where to sit on this game box. And you're playing the clay pieces, Tetris style, either standing up or on their sides or whatever, on top of the box. And they're in play for everyone, but only based on your perspective. So then you have like these key cards that say you need three greens and a brown and a white in a row or something, or three greens stacked on top of a brown and a white. And you, your literal whole goal is to get that combination just from your perspective. So it makes it really interesting because almost like every turn that someone else goes, they can put a block in your way or on top of something that you needed. And while they are like not doing it to mess you up, it's clearly messing you up because you put that in my
right
perspective.
Where you wanted.
So now I need to adjust and change. And so it was actually really fun. I played with the two players and three players. Mm-hmm. Three players was interesting because it made me feel like the one person that was sitting across from no one. So four sides, four player count. The one person sitting across from no one had like better advantage because almost every block was in their perspective. Mm-hmm. Where the person sitting across from another person, like you could play a block down that the other person couldn't see at all. So it was almost like a missed opportunity for a turn.
Interesting.
It was interesting, but it was super fun. So that is headed to Kickstarter. It's abstract strategy. It's I don't, what do I call it? It's
Tetris. Spatial. It's a three-dimensional spatial
game. Three-dimensional spatial game. Yes. Yeah. But it is headed to Kickstarter on February 16th from Inside Up Games. Will, what
yeah
are you looking at?
I am going to tell you about the game I'm looking at in 1 second. I just realized I saw this game at PAX mm-hmm when we were there
He's
last
been working
year
on this for years.
Yeah. And it looked very different, the pictures I saw of Block and Key, from the prototype I saw. So now, like, I really am intrigued.
Yeah, bring that to the game so we can play it.
I'll bring it over.
I've
been hoarding it on purpose.
Yeah. I do have to say, it kind of reminds me very slightly like Coral Islands from Alley Cat Games, where you have a 3D spatial mm-hmm and you're stacking dice, and the numbers that you can see matter, and the color. So you have your own color, and somebody else has mm another color. So you're playing against them trying to get configurations. So it's in a similar idea of 3D spatial elements, but
interesting.
Yeah.
Competitive action. All right, yeah. The game I'm actually looking at is Bloodstone from designer James Hudson, being published by Druid City Games. This is a 2-6 player dice battle game. It's illustrated by David Keg and Matt Paquette. It looks amazing. One of the things, I'm going to make a bold statement here. One of the things that James Hudson does well, and this is a big compliment, he plays the Pixar angle well, I would say. I think Pixar does a great job of like building out the world and the theme around a game. So rarely are they pasted on. And if they are, I don't even know who they are. The mechanics for some of the games that he's put together play so well in these beautiful worlds mm-hmm that he has built out.
Tidal Blades, Wonderland's War. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was going to mention that one because if you saw our House Awards show, which aired as part of TantrumCon, mm-hmm, you will know that we gave Best Art of 2020 to Tidal Blades. Really beautiful game. This looks like it's going to be another one. Really cool looking miniatures. In the game, you act as characters who are imprisoned in an arena where you have to battle it out every night and you die. And then you respawn and come back the next day and have to do it again. You're trapped over and over. The Bloodstone is this like empowering power. It's an empowering power that gives your character special powers when you've got it. At least that's the way it sounds. And you've got a bunch of different characters, all with crazy backstories from all over the realm, who are coming to duke it out each night in the arena. And it's dice. It's not dice worker or dice manipulation. I'm not even sure what it is. It's like a new dice mechanic that they've invented for this one, where you will... I don't know what you'll do because I don't understand it. It sounds interesting, though. You're going to play your dice in a way that is not rolling them and is not placing them to empower your characters and use them to battle it out.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so check that one out. I think probably Kickstarter. Anybody know?
Yep, Kickstarter.
On the 16th, Bloodstone from Druid City Games.
Coming February 9th is Hunted Woad Ridge. And this is a solo game that can also be played for two players from designer Gabe Barrett with Barrett Publishing. And this is a 20 to 30 minute game that has a mode for solo mode and then a cooperative mode. And in the game, you'll be rolling dice, and it sounds similar storyline to the Snallygaster situation, where you are a group of kids who happen to be in a small town in Colorado, and it's back in the 80s. Kind of reminds me of Stranger Things. And there is a monster that is trying to get you, and you have to find and defeat the monster before it gets you. And so you will be it's a time thing where you're trying to take it out and before it takes you out. Well, in And there is an alien that comes and also helps you. So there's dice rolling and a little bit of push your luck to accomplish that before the end of the game. And like Stranger Things, the parents have no idea what's going on. So
I think Katie is working on a video overview of that.
Hunted Woad Ridge. Yes, she is. So that is Hunted Woad Ridge coming to Kickstarter February 9th.
Well, why don't we jump into that other interview that Will was talking about earlier in the show? We have Connor McGooey from Inside Up Games about Block and Key.
What?
Welcome to the house.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Connor, I know you're the head honcho over there at Inside Up Games. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. Yeah. We, the only honcho of the head honchos, I guess. We survive also because I have a great network of volunteers and supporters. So thank you to all of them, obviously. But yeah, we started with Summit 4 or 5 years ago now. I can't even remember anymore. And we've done another 7 or 8 games since then. So it's been a busy couple of years, but it's been lots of fun. And meeting all the people in the industry has always been great. And like everybody else, like your listeners, I imagine, a little bit of sad for 2020 and the lack of conventions. But let's hope by the end of this year we might get those turned around.
I agree. Yeah, I was just looking. You funded 7 campaigns so far, and we're here to talk about the 8th one, Block and Key, coming to Kickstarter February... Oh, I just forgot the name. Forgot the time.
17th?
February 17th?
Well done, yeah.
Woo! February 17th, Block and Key. This is a 2-4 player abstract type game. Tell us a little bit of a brief overview of the game, then we'll dive in.
Yes, it's actually 1-4 player, which is awesome.
Oh, sorry.
No worries. Yeah, so this is actually a game that was pitched to me at Origins 2019, I guess now. So it's definitely been the longest game in the works for me. It was in the first 30 seconds of the pitch, I knew I was interested. I have a soft spot for abstract games, which is kind of funny. People wouldn't expect that, but I do. And in the first 30 seconds, like I say, I liked it, loved it, took it back and tested it, and I just can't get enough of it. And since then, I've basically just been refining the manufacturing process for the Kickstarter, so that way I'd have all the information needed and ready to go. And basically, we use the actual game box itself as the playing surface. So there are going to be 4 pillars that come in the box, cardboard pillars. Dense, high density cardboard, not just cheap stuff, that you actually lay the box bottom and the box top into these pillars to create a 2-layer board. So that the main game board is kind of raised up almost to eye level of the players at the table, because what we'll be doing is we'll be drawing blocks from the bottom layer. Think of 3D Tetris pieces, basically.
Okay.
So you'll be pulling these pieces from the bottom layer, and you'll be placing them one at a time on your turn into a shared play space. But the part that's interesting is, although we're all playing into the same play space, we're only worried about our unique 2D perspective. So it's one of those things that's wonderful because of how simple it is. And it's lots of fun to play just because your brain's trying to rotate all these blocks in different ways to make these different request cards fulfilled. And basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to match certain shapes and colors on these cards to what's being built on the game board in front of you. And that whole process of finding the best way and material for the blocks themselves, for both strength and durability and friction and size and shape and cost and all that, took about 8 different manufacturers and almost 2 years to do. So it's been a heck of a ride, and I'm super excited to finally actually get it up on Kickstarter shortly.
Cool. So I'm just envisioning this in my mind and for our listeners. So the bottom layer is the table, and that's where all these Tetris-like three-dimensional blocks are stored. And then there's some pillars, and there's the bottom box. Is it upside down?
Yeah. So basically, if you imagine on the table itself will be the box. The box bottom flipped upside down. And there are basically two spots for decks of cards that you could draw from for medium or hard difficulty of cards to fulfill. And then there's basically a 3x3 grid that looks like an excavation site with some amazing art done by Edu Valls, who just did a phenomenal job. Kind of like a lost temple-y in the jungle type vibe and feel to it, with a little bit more of an alien or space theme to the iconography to kind of play off something different. But basically on that bottom, you'll have this 3x3 grid, and 9 of these different blocks are placed out. And then on your turn, you could draw either 3 from a row or 3 from a column and place them into your personal supply. Once those have been emptied out, you'll draw new blocks from the bag, placing them into the spots that were just vacated. So basically on your turn, it's either draw 3 blocks or play 1 block. It's that easy and that quick, and it goes around really quick. So yeah, again, you'd have the box bottom flipped upside down, holding those items there. Then the pillars, kind of hook underneath the box bottom to stabilize it. And then to also have hooks on the top, which then stabilize the box top, which is flipped upside down as well. So you kind of have these flat surfaces for playing. And the box top just looks like a grid system, what we call the temple floor, where it has all this kind of iconography, which is great, because one of the other things which I had asked the artist Edu to do is to incorporate game rules and hints and tips and stuff into the actual art and design of the board. So the box top looks like a temple floor, but it'll also give you all the cues you need for setting up the game, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4 players. It has a little cues and icons in the corners for the solo play variants. The top box sides have the rules and iconography form so players can remember them. The box columns that support the top and bottom have the end game triggers for the different player counts. And then the box bottom sides have the action options for the players. So really, it's one of those things that hopefully once you can just, you learn it once pretty easily, you set it up, and then you'll always kind of be able to remind each other of any small discrepancies, because it's all kind of on the box to remind you.
Cool. So a player is either, like you said, pulling blocks or playing a block or playing the Tetris blocks on the player area or in the on the playing surface. What you said, are there cards you said that they are actually using to get the right configuration? How do they know what configuration to do?
Yeah. So basically, at the very start of the game, everyone's dealt a similar number of difficulty leveled cards. So everyone has 2 easy cards, 1 medium card, 1 hard card. And they're basically broken out that way by the difficulty to complete them, obviously. So for example, easy card might just have, 2 of the white cubes directly underneath 2 of the green cubes. And so as you're playing these blocks, the blocks are always in one solid color. So for example, you might have an L-shaped green block. There's the exact same L-shaped white block, orange block.
Gotcha.
Right. So you're placing these things, and the easy ones are going to be easier to complete because, I need to get 2 of these colors next to 2 of these colors. So that's easy to do. And these cards can be rotated. So what ends up happening is you have all these players sitting around the table, looking at, you know, at eye level at the box, kind of rotating their cards, trying to see where these things lie. Because as I mentioned, although it is 3D, you're usually actually closing one eye to see what the 2D view is, because how everything is flattened out. Because as things get more complicated, as the cards get harder and the board gets more full of blocks, is that you really need to see, okay, well, maybe now I need two of this color adjacent or kitty quarter to one of this color, but then that's adjacent to another different color. So, you know, maybe you're having three colors on there or two different colors in a different way. So you're really trying to figure out the best way to lay your blocks on the board to try to maximize cards. Because when you start getting really good at the game, you might be playing one block and fulfilling multiple cards with it.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then each time you're fulfilling a card, you're basically drawing new ones from either medium or the hard pile.
Oh, okay, so as you, I guess, so you're sort of getting new objectives throughout the game. That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
The blocks themselves, what are they made out of?
Clay, actually. So, yeah, it's one of the nice things. There's a nice heft to them, and they're not as slippery as plastic, which is really good. So they have a little bit of weight. The table, the box top, whatever you want to call it, is nice and stable. So yeah, after nearly 2 years of messing with molds and costs, we ended up going with a clay block, which
that
is,
fits really well with that Indiana Jones temple theme. That's really
exactly
cool.
Yeah.
So Jonah on our team has already played this, and I have not personally been able to play it, but he has really enjoyed his plays, and just I think the sort of mind-bendingness of that 2D environment on the 3D board, you know, I think he loves that mix, and I love abstract strategy games, so I'm interested in trying it as well, the prototype that we have.
Yeah,
so
really,
I'm sure he'll be spending more time in the episode talking about his experience with the game as well.
Oh, so awesome. Yeah, I got the actual manufacturer to make up all the prototypes, so to have it as close to final form as possible. Really having
cool.
those clay blocks and the actual, the game box is the proper strength, the support of the proper strength, to really kind of put it through the ringer and show, you know, that we spent a fair bit of time trying to perfect this.
So tell us a little bit about the campaign itself. February 17th, launching. What can people expect?
Yeah, so this is actually, so I'll just leave it with a little bit of a teaser here, but this is going to be, the plan anyways, is to have it quite different from all of our previous campaigns and to simplify.
Ooh, I love teasers.
Yeah, to simplify it, because basically, I don't know about other people, but I'm kind of sick of the never-ending scroll through of a Kickstarter page. So I mm-hmm. want to try to keep this as short and concise as possible. I'm really hoping for one pledge level for the game, maybe okay. two. I need to hash out some final details.
Sure.
But yeah, we're hoping for a super simple page, just to try to give people the info they need. If they want the game, get it. If they don't want the game, get out of here.
Sounds great.
Let's not waste anybody's time.
That's right. No, you got to make that decision. Good. Connor, it's been great having you on the show. All the best for Block and Key launching February 17th from Inside Up Games.
You're the best. Thanks for having me.
Bye. Bye,
crazy guy.
I love talking to Connor. He's so upbeat and personable, and I can't wait to give him a big bear hug, but he'll probably bear hug me. He really wants to be fast. Jonah.
Come on.
So one of his first games was called Summit.
Okay.
And it's very competitive, very mean, and you probably want to play that with him.
Perfect.
So
with him, yeah, do it.
With him.
It
yeah, so anyway. Whoa.
All right, so we've got a topic we need to hit and cover, and then we didn't mention this yet, but hang around, because at the end of the show, we're going to do a bunch of spoiler and talk on WandaVision, and we're going to wrap up Cobra Kai.
Oh, we're doing both Cobra Kai and WandaVision?
It's going to be a long yes. after show.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Hang around.
All right.
But right now, we're talking about some of our favorite couples games that work great with two players, games that we enjoy specifically with our significant other.
Nice.
In, you know, line with the holiday season coming around. So with the Valentine's on the horizon, Jonah and Ryan, your lady friends, aren't here with you.
They're not.
So you get to make up whatever you want as their favorite
sure
game.
Sure can.
What,
Chantel's favorite game is Settlers of Catan.
No,
it's not.
I was going to say, two-player. I don't know how no. well that would go two-player.
Two players.
Do you want wood?
And we always no. win.
Together. Wait.
Interesting.
Do you have do you know what her favorite one is? What would she say?
Chantel's favorite game.
Yeah, or her favorite couple game. What does she enjoy playing with just you and Chantel?
I know what it is. It's Wingspan because she wins every single time.
Can't be our favorite. It's her favorite, but it's not our favorite. Okay, since Valentine's Day, it has to be our favorite.
There we go.
Makes sense.
Maybe not. I'm not sure how that works. Anyway, Chantel and I really, really, really enjoyed playing My City together.
Cool.
Yeah. We just had a really good time playing that. I think so. Mostly the Tetris-esque style to that game. I'm normally just really bad at that, and Chantel's normally really good. But I started out really hot, which made me like want to play. And I already knew she would want to play because it was just her style of game.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we just had lots of fun playing that. We played it straight through for days, and it was just a really, really good time. And that has made her want to do more legacy type games, just based off of that one. So
I do remember the last time we talked about My City, it's sort of like you guys stopped because there was something going on.
That
did you guys actually
accurate
marital tensions?
What's happening? Accurate. No, what happened was this.
I remember you need a certain tile.
Listen, yeah,
that's what happened.
You're about to really have to do that. Okay, so listen, there was like one, I forget what episode level we were on, I forget, but there was like, the goal was like get one specific color from...
Yeah, you had to get down to the train station, right?
Yeah, down to the train station, from like the middle of the board down to the train station.
That's okay.
Right, and I had it all planned out. I had the piece that I needed to put where it needed to go to be there, but there were people at my house and they were talking to me. And so I'm turning and talking to them. I'm coming back to the game. I'm turning and talking to them. And I put a different piece in that spot without knowing it. And so when that piece was actually called and I was like, oh, perfect, it goes right here. I was like, no. And I lost out on so many trains specifically. She got like five in that episode and I got like one. And I got so frustrated. And it's like 11:30 p.m. and she's like, let's do another one. And I was like, no, I am done. I'm obviously too tired. I can't play this game right now.
Ruining everything.
Right. So
did you guys pick it back up is the question.
We have not. It's on our table because she keeps trying to ask me.
Okay.
But I have to plot.
Wait
accordingly.
Till February.
I can't lose game. I don't like losing
Wait
game.
Till February 14th and then pull it out. That's true. And we get dead.
Okay. That's true.
Well, speaking of tiling games, Melissa and I really do enjoy playing Patchwork together.
Oh, yeah.
That is a game from Uwe Rosenberg.
Yes. Tiling, you're making quilts and you have buttons and Tetris style pieces and. The first few times you play it, you'll probably score negative points. Yeah. So you need to be aware of that. It can be punishing. Mm-hmm. It's Uwe Rosenberg.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Couples games, this was a hard topic for me because Kevin and I actually don't play a lot of games, just the two of us. Normally we're playing three or four player. So
but Patchwork we play. Yeah.
It's a two-player only game.
It's a two-player only game. Well, she has it on her iPad. And we play that, our tablet, and we play that quite often. Or we've got the Americana edition, and the artwork's kind of cool on that one.
Ooh, I haven't even seen that.
I'll bring it for our couples games
show off night
video that we're going to be doing as well. So if you want to see this in Technicolor, check out the video coming out February 12th about our couples games. So,
what do you got, Ryan?
Yeah, I think the game that Katie and I have been playing the most, just us, is Tiny Towns. Like she really enjoys that, and there's not a lot of... take that with it, although with two players, even with the deck of random draws, there is a little bit of I can control how the game goes. So, but we have a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a super fun one. The one that I would put on the table as our couples game is the game Dragon... Now I can't think of the name.
Dragon Castle.
I almost said Dragon City. from Renegade, I think.
No, it's from CMON.
Who knows? Who knows what this game is, even how you play it. What I consider a good couples game is the one where I can sit down, I can have my little cup of hot coffee, my little cheesecake slice sitting there, and I can just kind of mellow. And if she beats me by a million points, it's okay.
Because I usually will.
If I get lucky and win, great. It's just got a great feel to it. It's aesthetic. It's basically Mahjong on steroids.
Yep.
And just a really beautiful board, amazing pieces. It takes a little while to set up. You got to stack all the pieces in the right order and follow the little layout map and get them all in the right direction and then take them off one by one and score. But there's like a nice just peacefulness to it, a zen that kind of comes with playing that game. And it fits really well in the date night category for me.
Yeah, one that I like is we haven't played it for a while, but we're getting ready to try the new version. Is we've enjoyed playing Caper, and that one is a battle game, which I mean, not necessarily a battle game.
One versus one.
One, yes. I mean, it's a two-player only game where you are drafting cards back and forth, adding them to your own tableau. There's a few cards in the deck that are a little meaner where you can maybe remove somebody else's card. But really, you're trying to take control and have majorities over the three center areas. So there's a lot of symbols on and icons on the cards that allow you to get points for certain things. So you're trying to get the right card in the right area, but you're drafting back and forth. So there's a little bit of tension there of, do I let him have this card?
Remember.
And I know there's this other one coming in this that's going to go with this. So where do I place it? So, yeah, it's a nice couples game if you don't mind
a little competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've actually, so that's from Keymaster Games, and they're getting ready to release Caper Europe, which we'll, I'm sure, be talking about on future episodes as a Kickstarter.
Yep.
Looks real cool. It's the same general style of art, but all brand new characters and everything, and looks real sharp, so keep an eye out for Caper Europe.
A game that came to my mind was Lost Cities from Cosmos. This is a, would you say, a set collection type game, Melissa, where you are basically playing numbered cards from your hand on your side of the board. It's a very long board, skinny long board, and you're playing these numbered cards into different colored locations, trying to make
ascending or descending.
Yeah, ascending or descending numbers, but you're trying to do that in a way that helps you and hurts your opponent.
Yeah, I've never played Caper, but a little bit of what Sarah was saying kind of reminded me of Lost Cities, because it is a two-player game, so basically you're fighting for the same cards because there's only one of each card, at least the numbers. And so I'm like, am I going to draw the seven desert? Is it in Kevin's hand? But you have to discard things, so eventually you're at the point where, like, I want to keep some of these cards to play. I have like four of them that I know Kevin wants, but I'm trying to hold on to, but I have to discard something. So do I discard something that's going to help him, or do I discard something I think I might eventually want? So, yeah.
And it was just announced a Lost Cities Roll and Write coming out this year. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another game that Katie and I really enjoy is Number 9, because it's very low conflict. I mean, everybody's getting the same prompt, and then you just, whoever stacks those number tiles the best gets the most points. And it's cool to be like, oh wow, you got a lot, you know, this, there's no attacking or anything. So
I got less than you again.
Well, we're both pretty good at it.
I was talking about me and Sarah.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun from Z-Man Games.
Yeah, I wanted to mention a cooperative game, and that is Codenames Duet, which can be very satisfying and rewarding when you think on the same level, or agonizing and frustrating. And what are you thinking?
Definitely agonizing and frustrating when Will and I play.
But Kevin and I enjoy that one, and trying to sync up with clues and read each other's minds.
I was going to say, no two couples game list or two player game list can be sort of complete without Codenames Duet, or even Seven Wonders Duel.
Right, Duel, yeah.
I mean, you got those kind of games that are sort of iconic in that sort of world of two player games. Seven Wonders Duel is definitely different than Seven Wonders, as you sort of have this pyramid of cards. I know Jonah and I played Truffle Shuffle a while back. Yep. It sort of got that same idea where this pyramid of cards that sort of overlay each other, and you're trying to make sure you take the card that doesn't reveal all these other cards in the next layer that help your opponent. But it's got this same theme as Seven Wonders, with the science and the military track and all the different tracks that you're trying to get points with. So, but yeah.
I know it doesn't quite fit the criteria of like a date night couples game, but what I think is one of the best couples board games ever, so maybe you can get together with like four other couples, is Ladies and Gentlemen.
I love that one.
For like improving couples communication,
right?
Because it's asymmetrical. The guy's at the market trying to find the right tiles and earn the most money, and then the lady, she's shopping, but ultimately the guy has to buy the stuff for her. But she can't be like, I need this dress for the set I'm trying to make. She just has to like throw him subtle hints.
I would definitely, I did look that up because I know we were discussing it. I would say it's definitely more on the party-esque side.
Yeah, it's a party game, but I think it's great for couples to bond.
The other problem right now is that it's very hard to get because it's not in print.
Well, just come over and play.
Come hang out, yeah. It is a super fun one. Have you guys actually played it? Yeah.
No, I mean, but you guys talked about it.
Right.
So.
Oh, man. You need to bust it out sometime. Right.
OG right here.
Yeah.
The hilarious thing is, like, obviously the game is kind of meant for the guys to play one side and the girls to play the other, but when you switch it, it makes it twice as funny when
the guys are like, no, I need this fan to go with my dress and you didn't buy it.
It's great. It's good stuff.
So, yes, I agree that it's probably a really fun game, but we'll probably have to keep it off the list for our video.
So, not date night.
Who makes the rules for
this? But it is a couple's game. Because people get really upset when we talk about games that they can't even buy.
You get hate mail in the comments.
Send me your hate mail if you're offended by that. I want to know. Will@tantrummouse.com.
And we want people to watch your videos. So. Well,
that's true. Yes. I thought we wanted conflict and craziness. Isn't that what gets the views these days?
We're like, well, if we can't even get the games, we're not even watching anymore.
Too much conflict. So.
And I thought the other game that sort of came to my mind, I think we were talking about this for couples games and sort of Valentine's Day, it all sort of goes together, is the classic Love Letter.
Yep, that was on my list.
Love Letter Batman. Yep.
Yeah.
Romantical. We've actually played the Hobbit version recently.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we shared it with our family. So,
excellent list. Cool stuff. So hopefully you found the perfect date night game for yourself. Go pick it up and have some fun with your significant other this Valentine's Day weekend, holiday. I don't know what today's date is, but it's probably soon.
And before we say goodbye, we have to talk about what's coming on the next podcast episode. What top 10 list are we talking about in the next episode? It's Katie's top 10 list. So she better be here so she can talk about
no pressure.
It because that's on the schedule.
We'll work it out.
Okay. And then we'll all know what her top 10 is afterwards. Are we making her top 10 with her?
No, she's already got it, but we're going to discuss.
Oh, gotcha. We're going to discuss whether she's allowed to have these games on her top 10 list.
So, can't wait. What we agree with or what we agree with and be like.
Oh, that makes sense. Excellent. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hope you had a blast with us at Tantrum Con. If you didn't, go watch the videos because they're still live on YouTube. See you next time.
Bye. Stick around for the show after the after show.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
Jonah, you haven't finished Cobra Kai?
I didn't finish it.
What? I can't believe that after...
I'm like episode 7.
Episode 7, he makes it to Okinawa, right?
So he's back from Okinawa.
Okay,
so we can talk about that. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think we got to talk about it all.
Which was great.
It was great.
Which is the exact reason I started watching Cobra Kai in the first place.
Man, there was a lot of throwback.
Throw me back. Yeah. I want to see it.
As I was sitting there, I was just thinking the whole time, Jonah's going to love the scene. Oh, Jonah's going to love the scene. It was so good. I forgot so many parts of that movie, though. I didn't realize. Like, I watched the flashback, and I'm like, oh, yes, I have seen this.
Yeah.
He did climb across the little plank onto the island, drums pounding. Oh, yeah, what a great scene.
Right. I think I've just watched Karate Kid 1. Just so many times that I forgot about some things that were happening in Karate Kid 2. So when they were going back, I was like, I remember this. But like, I knew I remembered this, but I just hadn't seen it as regularly. So it was so good. It really was.
When the guy turned around in that cafe, Will was like, what?
Chosen.
No way.
I love how they do like the subtle things too. Like they're at the bar and like, this weird ice cube stack thing. I'm like, what? He's just going to put it in his cup.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Chosen. It was so good. It really was.
So I got to spoil it for you. Can I spoil it?
No, I really don't watch it. I'll really go watch it.
So many good things in this episode.
So did I not say it to you back on season one? Did I not say it? If they bring Allie back, I am in there.
That's why I'm amazed you haven't watched the whole show.
That's what I wanted to see.
So all you know is that they've had Facebook conversations so far.
Right. Well, season one that happened in season one, and she like the end of season one was like she Facebooked him back or something.
No, end of season. Oh, she befriended him or something.
Yeah. And then
they looked her up.
Yeah, and then the Facebook message has been hanging out there for a while, and then she responded. And then he went to respond, which was funny in and of itself.
So good.
Yeah. And him taking the pictures and everything, that was so
That was a great montage.
With the wigs. The wigs made me laugh out loud when he was in front of the wigs. It was funny.
I loved the sushi. He like sticks it in his mouth and he's like, wow, did you get it? Spit it all out. So good.
Yeah. It was good. But I'm ready. I'm in there for that for sure.
I do think, so the one downfall I think is that... he walked way too soon.
Oh, yeah.
But we
knew it was coming.
I mean, we knew it was, but he can't be doing as much as he could do that quickly. If he
the
went
thing
from
about it for me,
several weeks of no movement whatsoever.
His foot was moving.
Atrophy so much.
That foot was moving.
Jonah has experience.
Jonah,
so here's the thing. I'm watching this with a hurt knee, and I'm going, not a chance. He didn't go to physical therapy. He wasn't in there 3 times a week.
He's only like 14, so right. He can
heal.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I once was paralyzed, but now I can walk. When I was a kid, it worked out great.
No.
His foot was...
One plot hole that's killing me is...
But I knew he was coming back to walk fast.
Right. Yeah. Johnny's not making any money from teaching karate.
Right.
He can't get a job. Where's he buying, like, harnesses and wall mounts to tie kids up with? And, like, where's all the stuff coming from that he's using for...
He's just finding it, like, around. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, let's go use that.
Just screw a bolt in my wall. You're going to walk.
It was also fun when he was looking for a new karate dojo.
Right. And so you saw the field or the park one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he's like, this space is free. You're telling me this is free? He's like, yeah, man, it's a public park.
And I go to my family. Right. And that wasn't even like, it was just some random dude right. in the park.
That was... Eagle Fang Karate.
Yes.
Amazing.
Eagle Fang Karate.
No. I'd wear that t-shirt. Where's that?
I need a t-shirt.
You know,
I
need one. I'm surprised I haven't bought you one yet.
All right, so what's the last thing you remember then? What was the, so we don't spoil too much.
That's literally like where I am.
Oh, the end of the,
yeah.
Okay.
Kreese came and met him at the park.
Did Kreese...
You saw
did,
the Kreese backstory?
Did you see some of the Kreese?
Yeah.
How much?
Yeah, did, like I mean, over the pit?
The snake pit?
No.
Okay,
no,
we're stopped.
Not over the snake. Is that where the name Cobra Kai came from?
We
gotta be.
I don't know.
Spoiled.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't see a snake pit.
Okay.
Not yet.
That's coming soon. Okay. The Kreese story is... Wow.
Yeah, it's honestly about what I expected. Like when they stuck him in Vietnam, I mean the pit part, obviously not. But
right.
Oh, he must have experienced some crazy stuff, and now he's all messed up as a result.
He is messed up.
Yeah, he just continues to be darker. I thought he was gonna have like redeeming character stuff, but
you gotta have a bad guy.
Yeah, which I'm okay with. I want the bad guy. Oh, man, there's so much good stuff to come. Allie, great episode.
Oh
great.
Yeah. Oh,
real good.
Wait, Allie with Daniel LaRusso and Johnny.
Yep.
And Daniel's wife all in the same place.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Great little double date action. Sure. Good times.
Over like a dinner.
We're not even going to talk about it. It's going to be good.
You're going to enjoy
it's
it.
Gonna it's going to be good.
Great stuff.
Throwbacks. If they don't show throwbacks, I'll be so mad.
And then...
I need a country club throwback.
Did we get a country club
throwback in there?
I don't remember.
I don't know if there's a country club throwback.
They went to like... Amusement park? What are they going?
Yeah, amusement. Yeah,
is that in there?
Yeah.
All right, just making sure.
Oh yeah, there's an amusement park throwback.
All right, just making sure.
How far did you get on the tournament canceled thing?
Mm-mm.
I'm spoiling everything. Mm-mm. I can't do it.
Okay,
no, I don't know anything. All right,
I guess we gotta go shut it off there. I thought we were gonna finish it.
Season 4.
Jonah's got to go get it all done.
Go watch it.
But we're all caught up. We'll move to WandaVision because I think we're all caught up on WandaVision.
Sure.
And Melissa's gonna join now.
Yay, something I actually watched.
I watched,
we forgive you.
I watched Cobra Kai when Melissa's not around.
I'll occasionally walk in and be like, oh, what's happening? Oh, okay.
People
that's
are punching each other
why
again.
Oh, okay.
And the answer is always like, no reason.
Will are like
just mad at
gripping
each other
the edge of our seats
again.
Waiting for the next amazing throwback. Yeah.
WandaVision, very cool. We finally got to see what's going on.
Outside the bubble,
yeah. Still not a great explanation of what's going on inside, which I actually like that they answered a bunch of questions, but still the big question, like, what is going on?
Yeah, the what they call the blip.
The blip, right? The blip. After everybody comes back from the snap, mm-hmm. which I think I'll have to go back and listen to an episode to see how wrong we are, but I think that's what we said. Like, yeah. Either it's in between or it's afterwards.
Let's talk about the casting of the little girl from Captain Marvel, who then grows up.
Oh, right. Come on. A physicist.
Come on.
Who's now brilliant.
Perfect.
It's not the same girl. Sense.
Same actor.
No.
It's not. It's a little girl in the
who's
movie.
Who's the actor girl?
Because
she's been in some other thing.
An actress, because it was literally 3 years ago, it was Captain Marvel. Right. She didn't grow 16 years.
Right.
I'll have to Google it.
The casting was perfect.
It was.
That's called a glow up where I come from.
A glow up.
Glow up.
Okay.
Perfect.
Good to know. Yeah.
Man,
she's good.
I was like, this is great. Yeah. I was right. I knew who it was immediately.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
It took me a minute.
No, I knew.
Rambo.
Yeah. Well, at first I was like, is that the mom? At first I was like, is that the mom? And I was like, that's not the same lady. I hope that's not the mom. And then when it was like, Maria, and then it's the mom, I was like, oh, that's the daughter. I know exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. That was a really cool reveal. Mm-hmm. The Daniel Wu.
Yeah.
That was a really good reveal. Did you guys see him at the very beginning when he flicked the magic, his business card? Or out of his hand at the very beginning.
I did see that. I didn't get it. What did I miss?
All right. Here's the Easter egg. In the Ant-Man movie, he is one of the characters. And he is and you remember when Ant-Man was in sequestered in his house for a long time and he was learning like all these different things. And one of the things he was learning was magic.
Magic, okay. Yep.
Daniel Wu is like, how do you do that? And he's like, he tries to do the trick. And all of a sudden...
He can pull it off now.
He can pull it off. He's like, phew.
Fun. He's been practicing for 3 years.
I was like,
5 years since
5 years. 5 or 3?
It was five years
well,
since
the snap was for 5 years.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So they
I do have to say, everybody wants a standalone season or series of him just doing investigative stories.
Like X-Files style.
Yes.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
That would be amazing. Mm-hmm.
I very thoroughly enjoyed the way that they tied in all the scenes that they showed us in WandaVision, the radio and the bee guy. Yeah. And now, like, it makes perfect sense. You're like, oh, yeah, that's what would happen. I can see. So, obviously, she's in control.
Oh, yeah.
I need Ryan.
We already said she's in control.
Right. Is she, like, is that just her superpower? She makes a giant field that's the size of a city? Is she powered by something?
To me, they literally answered almost all the questions when they show us Vision not really being alive anymore for that blip, which was scary. Scared me. I was like, what is that? It's on my screen. Oh, okay.
Oh, dead.
Then they showed us all the, like you said, all the scenes that we were confused on for the first three episodes. And they re-showed them. And I was like, we know what's happening. She is in shock from Vision dying. That she just put herself in their own little world.
But is she just like laying unconscious in the middle of a field? Is she like...
No, she's literally just... She lost her brother.
I think she lost PTSD. She just...
Yeah.
Well, and she was...
I think so.
She also went in the snap, correct?
Oh,
so
I don't remember.
Just came back.
What?
At the blip, right? I thought she was one of the ones that faded.
Ooh, we need to look that one up.
Time to Google.
We have to look that. We'll look that up. But I think in that circle is the town. I think everything's real. So if they actually go in that bubble, I think you're seeing real buildings.
Is it Eastville or Westville? What was it called?
Well, Westville. Because they're real people. They said, this is so-and-so and so-and-so.
And they're dead. Oh, but they were snapped.
I don't know if all the people in there.
They're real people from the town.
Okay.
Did Wanda die in the snap? The internets are saying yes.
Okay.
I think I remember her fading to...
Oh, Melissa remembers that, but I do not remember.
She's holding Vision.
She comes back from the snap.
Immediately creates this field? That's weird.
When she gets back? That's weird.
Weird. Well, because it seemed like no time had passed for anyone else,
right?
So she's still dealing with it. It's like he just died.
That's true.
What if it's like snap powered? Like
she got... She's suffering from
mental
break.
She just lost her loved one.
I'm just saying the power seems too strong. I know she's one of the stronger mutants. I don't know what they call them. Heroes in the MCU. Is she like city power wide for 10 days straight strong?
Yeah. Everyone knows that.
Okay.
So the first episode.
I think there's more is all I'm saying.
Her Vision when he was alive. Captain Marvel. Strongest ones.
Yep.
They do very little.
Right.
But they're the
Could have been saving the day.
Uh-huh.
The first one was 1950s. second episode, 1960s, and we saw 1970s. We haven't really talked about that, but I thought that was a cool episode with some of the...
I'm highly disappointed that we didn't get that 70s show's references in there. I was counting on that.
With the boss lady?
Right, basement scene. She was going to come down, be like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would have been fun.
So then we sort of took a break from that, and do you think next episode will be 1980s? We have like, what are we going to do? Like,
how many episodes are we thinking are total in the series?
Is nine. It like, there's nine.
Nine. They so we're said that. Halfway.
Oh, that's not enough.
Right. Exactly. So I think they got to be done. There's like.
Oh, but let's talk about how the next Marvel TV show, which is the. What is the.
I don't know.
Captain America's friend who can fly?
Hawk. Oh, Falcon.
The Falcon and somebody is March like 1st.
And the Winter Soldier.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the Winter Soldier's like March 1st. Nine is not enough, though.
Right.
I didn't want to watch it to start because it started weird and I don't really like Vision and Wanda. And then they hooked me and they're only going to give me nine episodes? Come on.
All right, here we go. Popular 1980 shows. Will they...
Will they rip these shows off?
Rip any of these? Here we go. Ready? Growing Pains. Family Ties. Oh, I just lost it.
When was the Brady
These
Bunch?
Are very 80s shows that I didn't 80s? Realize.
That
like, there's a very specific
that was the
visual.
House. Alf? There's one scene that's Alf. The house.
Alf. You guys want to do Alf?
Yeah, let's do that.
There's one Alf. Scene in the house that the set that is funny. The Brady too. Bunch house.
Brady, but yeah, I know. That was 1970s. Yeah. Let's see here. Doctor Who. Yeah, it's not going to be Doctor Who. A He-Man.
That would be amazing.
Knight Rider. Full House. Dukes of Hazzard. MacGyver.
Oh, think this through. Two babies that are going to be like 10 years old. So what
full
show is going to
house.
Have babies? Is it going to be Full House?
Full House could be
it
fun.
It might be Full House.
That would be great.
They're okay. Two
the two twin boys comes in and they're like, I can't think of any of the quotes.
You got it, dude.
That's yeah, what I'm going for. Go. I couldn't pull
think,
it off.
If you think about it. Okay. So say, so we had one, two, three, four was a non-decade. Then we have five, six,
it,
seven.
It didn't
eight.
Like advance the timeline at all.
No, it didn't advance the timeline. So we have... Then 80s, 90s, 10s. We could actually get to the 2020s by the ninth episode.
Mm-hmm. The final episode. They just catch up with normal time.
That would be interesting.
So one thing that I saw somewhere was that who was the hostess at that party?
Oh, I don't know. Are you talking about
the girl,
boss lady?
Yeah.
Somebody pointed out that she did not make it up on the list on the board of they were finding out.
Well,
in real
I think they're
life.
Still working on that board.
Is it the only character?
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Besides Geraldine, which we obviously knew Geraldine
well,
was.
Well, there's like the doctor.
I do have to be honest. When I don't know her name, but the scientist lady that Kat Dennings plays, that's her name, right? The actress. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when she showed up, I did not like how fast she figured out. Oh. That there needed to be a television. Like,
right.
She just got there.
She's smart.
She walked in, plugged in her own little thingamajig and figured it out.
Astrophysics.
Like, first off, y'all didn't have that thingamajig. She's the only one who has this thingamajig to plug in.
But they
in.
Have TVs all over the place.
Right.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
I was like, she's the only one with the thingamajig?
It was the Come wavelength on. Thing.
Then she was like,
everyone
oh, I need
knows.
This
CMBRs.
Big behind thing.
CMBRs.
Right underneath the table I'm sitting at. I was like, come on.
I did love that. I mean, when they were showing us those flashbacks earlier in this show, it was like, what in the world?
Oh, that was cool.
They're watching this on some old-timey TV. So it was super confusing. Well done, Marvel. Well written. Because mm-hmm. then right. it makes sense now. Great.
I think before our next podcast, we're also going to see not only the fifth episode, but also the sixth episode. Will that be the 1990s? Are you guys ready for some 1990 shows?
Oh, yes.
Ready.
Saved by the Bell.
Quantum Leap.
Rest
in peace to Dustin Diamond.
Oh,
did you
hear about that?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear that.
The bad day.
Seinfeld.
That would be amazing. They could totally do that with the background music and everything.
They
and
got
Wanda
the boys.
Coming in.
They got the boys. They're going to highlight those boys.
X-Files. That's
probably true. They'd be 20 by that one.
Oh.
Some Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. Did you guys say Saved by the Bell?
I did, yeah.
Fresh Prince.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
That would be great, but they won't do it.
They won't.
I would love it.
Family Matters.
Could
Friends.
Matters.
They could do Friends.
They could do Friends.
I think some of those could work. An X-Files one, but probably wouldn't work in the town. But maybe.
Only judging by the fact that I saw like the preview at the beginning of the show, and maybe they left spoilers out of it. That'd be great. But they look like they pretty much ended at the Brady Bunch on the previews. Like they don't show everything else looks very modern.
Season two.
But maybe. Oh, we'll see. Is there going to be a season two? Is this just going to turn into like
We're just going to switch to
supposedly this
Winter Soldier,
said,
and it's going to be a continuation.
This is Phase 4. They were thinking the Black Widow would be the beginning of Phase 4, but this show is the beginning of Marvel Universe Phase 4. So,
are Vision and Wanda going to go into the next show? The Falcon and
is Vision even alive?
He's not alive. I don't think he's alive.
So how's he getting in the next show?
So did Wanda's we lose Jarvis completely? That's my question.
Yeah, Jarvis got replaced in the movies by
Jarvis, by the girl who I don't like her voice. Yeah. Ooh, I don't like her voice at all. And now she's with Spider-Man. I don't like her voice.
Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow?
No.
Whoever the new Jarvis
was Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Jarvis went into Vision.
Gotcha.
Tony Stark put somebody new in Iron Man and then gave him to Spider-Man glasses and the glasses. And I don't like her voice.
Oh, I don't remember either.
Now, is Black Widow out?
No, it's not. They're thinking about going to Disney Plus now.
Okay.
That's fine.
I was like, I felt like I saw previews,
as long
but
as
I never
$20.
Saw it. It'll be $20.
Let's talk about it.
It'll definitely be $20. But
okay,
we'll have a party.
That's the problem.
Everybody come over.
They're going to get me. They didn't get me for Mulan, but they'll get me.
You held out?
Black Widow.
Did they get you on HBO for Fresh Prince?
No. Free trial.
Free trial.
We can all chip in $5 for Black Widow.
Fortunately, the Tantrum House has popcorn and a projector.
There we go. So.
Done.
Movie night. Awesome. Well, I think we caught up on. So we're going to have to do one more episode of Cobra Kai. We got to finish it out.
Yeah.
Got to watch that.
We'll watch it.
And then we'll hit the WandaVision episode 2 and or whatever the next two are.
5 and 6.
See you guys in the next episode.
All right. Gonna start.
Let's do it.
That's it.
I apologize.
I didn't mute us. Okay. Normally I do.
Yeah.
I tricked you guys. I'm sorry.
Okay. Here we go again. Mute us. We can't do it. We don't have the self-control.